You're listening to the Vegans Explore Network, found at vegansexplore.com.
And we have James Wildman from the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida joining us. And James, tell the people where they might know you from.
So again, my name is James Wildman. I work for the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida. I'm the humane educator, and you might know me from maybe going into your schools. I've been to, I give about, 500 presentations every year. So I've probably spoken to over 100,000 people in the last 13 years. And it's about 10,000 presentations, something like that, some ridiculous amount. So you might have seen me give a presentation in your school, in a community, or you might have seen the YouTube video, 101 Reasons to Go Vegan.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about, I know the first time I heard about you was for your talk that you were giving, that I believe it was like 101 Reasons to Go Vegan. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So tell me a little bit of the genesis of that.
So I started working for the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida 13 and a half years ago. So they had a presentation already. So my job as a humane educator is I go into schools, universities, go into the community, and I give presentations on being kind to animals. And the big presentation that I give during the school year is on veganism. So they had a vegan presentation, but it was rather pedantic. So I kind of put myself in the shoes of a student. Like, what would I want to hear for 60 to 90 minutes? And I created this 101 Reasons to Go Vegan, I've been doing it evolves. But I mean, I've been doing a variation of it for the last 13 and a half years.
And from the first time you did it until most recently, what have been some of the major changes that you've added to the presentation?
It's just so much information. I really struggle because I can't, I have a difficulty of taking things away. So it just keeps adding to it. There's just so much more information. Veganism has become more, more pronounced, more mainstream. So there's more products on the market, more restaurants are serving vegan options, more people are going vegan. So in the beginning, I had to define what vegan is, and I still do, but it seems like at this point, it's like 6 degrees of separation. Everybody knows somebody who's vegan, whether it's a family member, a friend, a loved one, whoever it might be, or a coworker. So yeah, I mean, a lot has changed. And obviously there's more information in terms of just the detriment that raising animals for food has to the environment, to our health, and to obviously the animals. And obviously COVID-19 is a perfect example of that. So yeah, there's just always more and more information coming up. And I try to fit in as much as I can in 60 to 90 minutes.
And where do you see veganism right now in terms of a movement and the progression of a movement with everything that's happening right now? How do you see the landscape painted?
Well, it's growing. I mean, it's always growing. I'm looking forward to when clean meat or lab grown meat becomes accessible to the average adult, the average person. So that's kind of where I see the future at. But right now, with Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods, it's pretty easy, and you know, anybody can really go vegan if they just put some effort into it. So with the access to food that we have in the United States, it's pretty easy to make the transition from eating meat to eating plant-based.
How did you first become vegan? Like, what were those seeds that were planted to eventually get you onto this lifestyle?
My mom was vegetarian my whole life growing up, but never, taught my brother or I or my father to live that lifestyle. So, I mean, I grew up eating meat, dairy, eggs, and fish. And when I got to college, I went vegetarian. And after college, my brother recommended that I read Animal Liberation by Peter Singer. It just made sense. I mean, it's just very logical, very rational. I like to think I'm a logical, rational person. So, you know, it's hard to argue with reason. So I just got tired of making excuses. And it was, you know, it's like, all right, I guess I'll go vegan. And that was it.
So how did you initially go vegetarian in college?
Yeah, all right. So my my story is that not the most noble story, let me put it that way, but it was the first day of college, and they broke us up into small groups, and I went to a small university in New England, and on their first day, it's just freshmen, no upperclassmen, and my group had me posed of like 9 women and myself. I wasn't complaining, but again, everybody was quiet, shy, and nobody was really talking. So when lunch came, most of the women, it was 2 lines actually for lunch. There was a hamburger line and a veggie burger line. And when lunch came, most of the women in my group went to the veggie burger line. And like a raging 18-year-old heterosexual, I just followed suit. I wasn't vegetarian. I wasn't even on my radar, even though my mom had been, it wasn't on my radar, but I was just trying to get laid. So I followed the women, and it was a social experiment. Failed miserably, but I stuck to my veganism or my vegetarianism, and it was only after college that I became less selfish, and I started to, let me actually look into what this is. And I read Animal Liberation. I was like, all right, I should do this for something other than myself. That was it. Went vegan, never looked back.
I'm glad you shared that, because what I'm realizing as we do these podcasts and speak to these different people, one of the questions we always ask, usually it's the first question we ask, is what's your vegan origin story? And it didn't dawn on me until recently that would be really cool to just highlight that alone for all these people who are in the vegan space. How did they get started? Because somewhere in there, someone's going to hear their story. Someone just getting started is going to be like, oh, wow, you know, someone else went vegan and now they're like really super vegan, you know? So, you know, maybe it's possible for me to continue doing that. So I appreciate you sharing your unique story, because who knows, someone listening, you know, for the first time may resonate with what they say. So how did you get involved with ARF?
So I've been working with youth since college. I started, it was like a work study job, worked at the YMCA with the kids. So I've always, for me, it was just kind of fun. It was like, all right, I get paid to kind of play basketball with the kids. And then I obviously got, you know, where I tried to empower them through maybe things that I found interesting or that empowered me. And I was living in Boston, working for a Big Brother, Big Sister, that program. And I had got my master's degree. I just finished in human education from the Institute for Human Education. So it's like a holistic approach to education, looking at environmental issues, animal rights, human rights, and how they're all interconnected. So once I got the degree, I wanted to use it like more than what I had been doing before. So the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida happened to put up a post for human educators. So I was like, all right, I mean, I got the degree for it. So just kind of worked out, and good timing. So that's how I got into the Animal Rights Foundation.
So let's talk a little bit about the 101 reasons. Obviously, I'm not going to have you do the 101 reasons right now, but what are some of the things you find resonate the most with your audience in those 101s? Like, what are some nuggets you can give us right now that you would feel would help people out the most?
I just try to break down the misconceptions. And I mean, obviously the biggest one is you need to eat meat to get protein. So the way I structure the presentation is I basically, for students at least, when I'm going into a high school or college, I don't tell them that I'm talking about veganism. And I prefer that the professor or teacher doesn't tell them that either. So I don't want them to have preconceived notions going in. So it's only at the very end where I say, well, this is what veganism is. And most people are like, oh, it doesn't seem so bad after all. But I answer the questions before they even think of the question themselves. So, you know, where you get your protein from? So one of the things I might be like, well, you know, if somebody says to me, where do you get your protein from? I say, you know, Publix, you know, Whole Foods, you know, Winn-Dixie, where do you get yours from? So, you know, just try to make humor out of it. Yeah, obviously cow's milk is so easy to just bash. Just in terms of the biggest thing I talk about now is, I mean, I've talked about this for a while, but 65% of the human population is lactose intolerant. You know, if you use 65% of people are allergic to broccoli, nobody's going to eat broccoli anymore. So it just shows you the immense power and influence that the dairy industry has. I mean, I'm almost in awe of it, just in terms of, you know, this product that you know, 2 out of 3 people can't consume, or when they do consume it, they get like a stomach ache or gassiness or diarrhea. So when I point that out to a lot of students, especially, you know, if it's, you know, African-American, Asian-American, Latin-American, Native-American, I mean, their numbers of lactose intolerance in those communities is off the charts. And so kids will be like, oh, like, so, you know, I now, like, I thought having a stomach ache while drinking milk was normal. And it is normal. It's normal to be lactose intolerant, but, you know, you obviously don't need to consume it. And then the other, you know, thing to go along with that is that 5 billion people are lactose intolerant. So that's what that number equals. 65% is 5 billion people. Again, if you just put 5 billion people, you know, can't consume carrots, then carrots wouldn't be on the market anymore. But because the dairy industry has such a stronghold on our consciousness and, you know, in the schools, the mystery meat, the cow's milk that's always served. So I think that resonates with kids. The humor of, like, you know, talking about what an egg is, you know, in terms of where it comes from. And, you know, I talked about how, you know, it's it's an unfertilized egg. So, you know, it's, you know, basically it's like a period. I mean, it's not a menstruation cycle. But when kids hear, again, my dog, when kids hear that they're eating something that's kind of, you know, equating to a period, it's no longer that appetizing. So I try to put humor into it. And then I try to talk about the ramifications of consuming these products. So I have a chart that, a slide that has a list of all the leading causes of death, heart disease, cancer, strokes, diabetes, obesity, kidney failure, stuff like that. So, you know, I asked the kids, you know, please raise your hand if you know somebody or knew somebody who has or had cancer. Raise your hand if you know somebody who suffered a heart attack and diabetes, and all the hands go up. So I say, you know, which box are you going to fall into? So I try to get them from all different levels, an emotional level, from a rational level, from, you know, health, environment, ethics, and, you know, hopefully it resonates.
So you've been active in the community. You've been an advocate for the animals for years. How many years now?
Well, I've been working for ARF for 13 and a half years. Been vegan.
And how long have you been vegan, vegetarian?
18, 19 years.
So for a while now, you know, you've been in this community. What have been some of the challenges you faced, or maybe even still face up until now, as a vegan?
The challenges, I know with kids, and this goes for adults as well, is having a support group. So, you know, a lot of kids, and again, adults will want to go vegan, but if their family is not supportive, it can be difficult. So, you know, I think now with social media, it makes it very easy for people to connect with others, even if they're not within, you know, in their neighborhood, they can at least connect. And they can have a discussion with people who might be going through the same concerns as themselves. So that's kind of where I see it at. I mean, the fact that there's so much food available, so many more vegan products on the market. Of course, sometimes the cost can be slightly higher, but when you look at like natural vegan products that come from the earth, like fruits and vegetables and rice and beans, that stuff is readily available, and the price is dirt cheap. So, you know, I think it's just getting more people to go vegan, getting more people to try it, and getting, you know, more of those people to influence those around them.
Can you tell me a little bit about maybe some of the things you have going on now? Anything that you want to plug, talk about?
Well, yeah. So I'm trying to reach out. Or I'm reaching out to teachers right now to schedule presentations, and it's not just on veganism. I have presentations on wildlife conservation. So that looks at a critical look at animals living in captivity. So circuses, zoos, and marine parks. And none of these presentations are designed to allow for critical thinking. You know, it's I'm not there to tell them how to think. I'm there to give them information. They can process it. And then they can do what they want with that information. So I try to be creative. I try to be humorous. I give statistics. I'm always giving statistics. I'm always backing it up with resources. And you know, when it comes to the vegan presentation, the sources are all from the government, from whether it's the World Health Organization, the CDC, the American Heart Association. So I'm giving statistics that are legit. And when I talk about wildlife conservation, I allow them to come to the conclusions. So one of the activities I would present to kids, and this would be more when I was doing it in classes, but I would give them a piece of paper with an animal in the middle of the piece of paper, like a black and white drawing of like an elephant or a tiger or a dolphin, orca whale. And I just say, draw the background for that animal, put that animal in a habitat, environment, a place that you think they'd be happiest living in and can meet all their needs. And, you know, 99 kids out of 100 are going to draw, you know, the savannah, the ocean, they're going to draw a forest. They're not going to draw a zoo. They're not going to draw a circus or a marine park. And so, okay, so why is it that our experience with these animals are in captivity when we recognize ourselves that that's not in their best interest if we're not drawing a marine park for this animal? We're drawing their natural habitat. So that allows for engaging of discussion. Another presentation I give is on companion animals. So it looks at the importance of spay and neuter, going to your local shelter, buying, so adopt. Also talks about puppy mills, positive reinforcement training. So again, hands-on. It's a little different right now doing everything virtual, but if you are a teacher, even if you're not a teacher, if you're somebody who's interested in scheduling a presentation, you can reach me at james@arff.org. That's james@arff.org. And all the presentations are free. So being remote is great because I don't like, you know, I would have people who'd want me to present in other states, and we don't have the budget for that. So now they can, you know, I can do everything virtual, which I wasn't doing before. So if anybody's interested, they can contact me.
And let me ask you a question. Are you originally from South Florida? Or are you from another part of the country?
New Jersey.
And what are your thoughts on South Florida?
Yes. I mean, I love the weather. I was coming from Boston, so it was great to like just be able to walk everywhere, and you need a car here. But no, I mean, this is great. I love the fact that I can go for a run any time of the year. But yeah, no, I mean, it's great. I have no real issues with Florida.
So if somebody's looking to move down, because really what we're about here at SoFlo Vegans is putting a spotlight on our region. So people come to move, visit, that people see it for what it is. It's a vegan hotspot, and we get to continue to do work behind the scenes, whether it's a nonprofit organization or a community like SoFlo Vegans, to support the businesses, support the nonprofits, so that we can continue to grow. So, you know, I appreciate you being here, being a voice for our community. I appreciate the work that you've done through the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So appreciate the work you've been doing through the Animal Rights Foundation of Florida. And for people who are listening right now who may not be familiar with ARF, could you tell me a little bit about the organization?
Yeah, so ARF is a nonprofit organization that was founded in 1989. So we've been around for a while. And we basically, you know, our voice for, well, I don't want to say a voice for the voiceless, because these obviously animals have a voice. But we basically try to protect and educate people about the animals in the community. So the animals in Florida, and we target many different areas affecting animals, from circuses that use animals. So we've been instrumental in getting like Ringling Brothers to no longer have their circus, which they actually ended their circus in Miami. So we'd like to think that we had something to do with it. We were out for years outside of American Airlines Arena, letting people know the abuse that happens in the circus to animals, to elephants, to tigers, lions, bears. So we also work in the schools, obviously. That's what I do as the immune educator. We talk at commission meetings to get them to enact ordinances to protect animals. One of the big things that we've been instrumental with is getting a pet sale ordinance. So it's banning pet sales in cities. And there's over 40 cities in South Florida, which is absolutely amazing, that have adopted this ordinance. So it's not anti-dog or cat. We're just trying to get people to adopt dogs and cats from their local shelter, from rescue organizations, instead of going to like Petland and buying a puppy that came from a puppy mill. I mean, when you look at it, it's like 95 to 99% of the dogs for sale are coming from puppy mills, which are large breeding warehouses that only care about profit. So we're all for encouraging going to your local shelter, going to rescue organizations, and adopt. So those are some of the things that we work on, and we've been doing it for over 30 years.
And one more time, where people can get more information about ARF?
They can visit our website, arff.org. That's arff.org. You can also visit us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/animalsflorida. We also have a YouTube page. We have a Twitter as well. And I have some resources as well. So if somebody's interested in like going vegan, I just created a vegan starter kit that you can find on our website, again, arf.org. And if you go into the human education section of that, of ARF, I also have created a vegan shopping guide. It's like a wallet size guide that I give to students. Again, this is all free. So we like to encourage people to be compassionate, to embrace empathy.